Welcome to the Think Like a CFO podcast, where we dig into not only what it takes to start a business, but to keep your business thriving for years to come using my signature CFO money method framework. I'm your host, Melissa Houston, and I am a CPA and business financial coach. I have over 20 years of experience in business, and it is my passion to share my knowledge of business finance and personal finance with other women. You can also follow me with my column at Forbes.com or my column with Entrepreneur.com. I am so excited about releasing this podcast today. I had the exciting opportunity and immense pleasure to speak with Emily Morse, also known as Sex with Emily, who is an amazing entrepreneur, podcasting pioneer, and just an all-around kind person. Doctor of Human Sexuality, host of the Sex with Emily radio show and podcast on Sirius XM, author of Hot Sex, Over 200 Things You Can Try Tonight, is recognized as one of today's most insightful sex educators, challenging the cultural taboos, misinformation, and awkward sex talks to create a future where people can deeply connect and shamelessly embrace pleasure. She has inspired millions of people to normalize sex and pleasure by creating a safe space to talk, explore, and learn. Sex with Emily has created a loyal audience of people from every walk of life, in every stage of life, no matter their gender, lifestyle, or orientation. Everyone can find a safe space with Emily. Dr. Emily is an executive producer and host of the popular podcast Sex with Emily. She is a regular guest expert for Glamour, Bustle, Refinery 29, Harper's Bazaar, The Today Show, The Doctors, and so many others. Today, Sex with Emily is the longest running sex and relationship podcast anywhere, and an endeavor Emily has grown into a thriving media company. Learn more at sexwithemily.com or by following at sexwithemily on Instagram. Emily Morse, I am so excited to have you on the show today. Welcome to the Think Like a CFO podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
This is certainly very exciting around here. I mean, you're like a superstar and you've been on Dr. Phil, The Doctors, and Dr. Oz on TV. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been on the Doctors, and then Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz were on my show recently. But I've been on the Today Show and Conan O'Brien, and I've done a lot of TV interviews. So
that's amazing.
It's fun. Yeah. Come on and talk about sex, but can you not say the word sex too much? You know, still like that sometimes on TV.
Yeah, especially daytime, I guess, eh?
Yeah. Can't show a vibrator. You know, it's okay.
Oh, really? I didn't know that there were rules around that.
Yeah, there are rules around that. But they all want to talk about it. You know, it's still very taboo.
Okay.
Of sex.
So I would love for you to talk a little bit about your business and your podcast and stuff and have the listeners get acquainted with you.
I started a podcast 15 years ago in my living room in San Francisco, and it was really from a passionate place to make the conversation of sex less taboo. And it's turned into a podcast and a show and a media channel that helps people have easier conversations about sex, prioritize their pleasure, and essentially liberate the conversation because it's so shrouded in mystery for many people. But I started it, and then I wasn't thinking of myself as an entrepreneur. I was thinking of myself more like an artist and doing a service, but then it turned into a business. And it was very early on in podcasting. A lot of people didn't really know about podcasting until about 4 years ago when Serial came out, was when it sort of had its bump. But then it's why I started a business, and I realized that I really wanted to make a living doing what I love. The podcast was successful. I had gotten a live radio show at the time, a book offer, but advertising and podcasting was still a really unknown medium. And so I felt like I was an influencer before there was the word influencer, because I started talking about some toys that I liked, because one of the bonuses was, while I wasn't making money, I was getting a lot of free sex toys and products. And I talked about this one that I loved, and the sponsors called me. This was like 2010, the next day, and they said, our sales went up by 40%, and can we work with you in some way? And I was just sort of winging it. I said, yeah, well, how about you pay me, you know, a couple, I don't remember what it was, maybe it was like $200, and I'll mention it on my podcast. And I said, I also have a YouTube channel, and I'll do a video, and I'll also tweet about it. So this was when it was just, there was no Instagram, there really wasn't, there was barely podcasts. And so that's how I started to build my business, was with using sponsorships. tips and influence to build a brand.
That's amazing. Yeah. And it was definitely, you were probably the pioneer of sponsorships back in the podcasting days and stuff.
Yeah. Now there's like whole networks that are just selling advertising for podcasts, but I've been always doing it internally. I've had an internal salesperson and I was doing it up until 5 years ago. I've always sort of done the classic entrepreneur thing of I was spreading myself too. I was doing everything. I was doing the podcast and hiring and doing all the sales, but then I was able to bring it in-house and I have somebody who's working with sponsors.
Now, back in your earlier days when you were starting your podcast, was there a struggle or did it take long to build your business?
Melissa, I did every struggle. Now that I know more about running a business, I did every struggle. I was so passionate. I had that undying passion that I knew that this was a topic that people really needed to learn about. They were consuming the podcast. They were reading my blogs. They were buying products that I talked about, but I really did not know how to monetize it. So I wasn't going to give up, even though I had to move out of my apartment and I literally sold everything I owned on Craigslist. I didn't have that much. I didn't have a ton of stuff, but I sold like furniture, my suitcase, like whatever I could sell. And I lived on a friend's couch for a while and sublet my place. And before there was Uber, I drove friends around. My friend used to go to fly. I was living in San Francisco and he used to fly to LA every week. And I said, what do you pay a cab? Just pay me. I'll pay you $40. And so I was really just sort of ruthless and I was determined to figure out how to make a business out of it. Like I wasn't going to give it up, but I took odd jobs and I cleaned houses for a while. I did all the things I needed to do so I could buy some time to figure out how to actually grow a business.
So what drove you? Did you have some sort of inner feeling that was telling you, don't give up, don't give up?
Yeah, I had an inner knowing. I kept at this feeling like I'm so close, but it's like, how could this not be making money if people want to do a TV show about it? And I got a book offer. So it didn't make sense to me. And I was like, I've just got to figure that part out. I actually had a friend who's a very smart, I think it's really important to have good mentors. Yeah. And I had a friend who was a mentor to me who was owned a venture capital firm. And we were at dinner one night and it might sound naive to, and I guess it was to people in business, but he said, I keep hearing you saying that you're struggling about money and that you're struggling making business out of it. He said, but I just have to ask you, what percentage of your time do you spend focused on business? And what percentage you said focused on the podcast and the content? And I was like, well, it's probably 98% creative and 2% worrying about how to make a business. And he said, okay, well, then you really need to spend some time. You got to move that needle. You got to change that percentage of time and put some into really making a business. So I was like, it just seemed so. Now I look back, I'm like, oh, and it was like this aha moment that it's not just going to happen because I am stressing or I'm worried. I had to really devote time to say, okay, so what are other people doing? Like talking to people, getting advice, talking to radio stations, talking to other podcasters, and then just really being smart about it and asking people. And then I just thought, okay, I'm going to focus on the business of podcasting and sex. And then for a while, though, the podcast had to take a back burner. While I still did it, I would show up at the studio and I wasn't able to prep and I felt like the shows weren't as quality because I was trying to do business. So I sort of, and it was also right after the recession, 2009. So it was just a really hard time, but I just kept going because I just knew that this show was going to change people's lives. I knew that people needed it.
I can totally relate to that. For me, being an entrepreneur as well, coming into the scene, I knew my strength, you know, I know my accounting, I'm a CPA, you know, I really did think that, oh, it's going to be a piece of cake being an entrepreneur because I have such a strong business background, but it's so different. You know, it's like you have to learn the marketing, the sales funnels, oh my God, there's just so much to know. And for me, I'm right-handed and it felt like I was constantly trying to write with my left hand.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. That's how I felt. I'm like, I'm really good at the pod, you know, I'm really good at helping people. And everything else was like pushing a boulder up a hill. But then you have to learn everything. I think it's really useful now that I know I've done every job in my business.
Yeah, so. For sure. You definitely have to learn everything and you have to have your hands in everything as an entrepreneur. But it's funny because I remember when you and I were talking before, we were talking about how sex was such a taboo subject, but money might even be on the same level or more so to talk about money than sex.
Yeah, I think it is. Money and sex are two of the most controversial topics, taboo topics that people in relationships do not speak. They don't talk about. But what they show is that there's been a lot of studies that show that the three most common factors for divorce is money, sex, and children, having kids. So if you think about money and sex, we just are so shameful, and society just doesn't encourage us to have healthy conversations around it. Both of those topics are shrouded in mystery, and we think that it's just not polite or it's just respectful to talk about, but they don't, you know, what a lot of what I do is make these conversations easier to talk about. You could actually take a lot of the things I talk about with sex and plug it into the financial conversation. One of my things is timing, turn, and toe. Timing, tone, and turf is the three T's of having a healthy conversation about any, or difficult healthy conversation about hard topics. So when I think about it, it could really be about money. You could just, you want to pick the right time. When you're with a partner and you're not stressed, maybe you're having dinner, you're going for a walk, you don't want to do it when you're angry and you yell out and you say something that you don't want to, you regret. And then your tone is always curious and open and a little bit lighter. You don't want to start with, hey, we really need to talk about our sex life and you haven't been showing up for it. Or we need to talk about your debt. Why are you spending so much money? It's the same exact thing. You want to say, hey, so, you know, I realize that we haven't talked about this topic a lot and it's actually hard for me too, but I really think that we both want the same things. And I'm hoping we can have a conversation right now that we can both really listen and hear each other. And then the turf for the bedroom talk is outside the bedroom, because people think you should have it in the bedroom and because you're already having sex, but that's just mixing up different states of mind. Yeah. But I wonder, for financial conversations, you don't want to do it when you're standing in your office looking over a credit card bill or whatever. When you're standing there trying to pay, you want to find an environment where you feel safe and comfortable and it's quiet and you can have an uninterrupted, healthy conversation.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's funny because I was brought up in a house where we spoke freely about money, and I'm in a marriage where we speak freely about money. So to hear that money is one of the top reasons people get divorced, I mean, I understand that. I've heard the statistics. I just don't comprehend that, because it's such an open topic in my life.
Well, Melissa, you're so lucky. So when you say that your parents talking to you about like how much they made and how much you should make and how to balance your checkbook, is that kind of thing? Yeah, I never talk about that. And yeah, my parents didn't talk about it. And I'm not in relationships where I knew what they were making. But I think we should. There should be transparency.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, before you get married, you absolutely have to have that conversation.
Right.
I can't imagine people going into a marriage without even talking about it at all. I have met people who they have completely separate finances and they insist it works for them. And if it does, that's great. You know, to me, and it's just my personal view, is when you're sharing a relationship, you might as well share your bank account and stuff too. But people
share
feel
everything.
Very, share everything, but people feel very funny about it.
Yeah, I think that they feel shame about it, or it's not enough, or maybe they don't understand it. I mean, there's people who, you hear the stories all the time about people, like, they don't understand their 401ks, or their partner dies and they don't know where the money is. You know, my mom's actually a financial planner. She would always say that she'd sit down with women whose husband died and they're like, well, I don't know where the checks are. I don't know where the money is. And I think we all have to become educated and become experts of our own financial situations and know where our money's at and how we're investing. And so I think, yeah, before you get married, find out what is their relationship to money? Are they a saver? Are they a spender? Do they have debt? When they save up, where do they want to spend the money? You know, and I think that's also part of, I made those mistakes in my business as well. I was so busy that I really didn't sometimes know where the money was at one point. And then I got really good business managers, because I know I'm not a CPA. Like, it's hard for me to spread. That's still not my forte. But part of having a business is having good people that you trust take care of that stuff for you. And then we have weekly meetings and monthly meetings. And then I understand it. But you don't have to be the expert in all of it, but you got to have people help. You can't do it all.
Yeah. And I always say this, you don't need to be an expert, but you need to understand so you're making informed financial decisions in your business.
Right.
You know, exactly. Ultimately, you're the CEO of your business. Nobody's going to care about it as much as you do.
That's exactly it. Informed decisions rather than coming from fear. And I think that's what people do in sex and money conversations. It's more fear-based. And it's also formative. So if you grew up in a home where everybody was saving, right? Saving money, or they were always talking about, you know, you can't spend here and you can't spend there. Much like sex, if you were told that it's wrong to masturbate or it's wrong to have sex before marriage, and you had all these ideas, all these beliefs sort of instilled upon you, and then you become an adult, you don't even separate. And like, do I still believe that? Is that still true? We bring that into our next home that we live in, if we live with a partner, and we're still withholding with money and not open. So I think it's time to just sort of open up those conversations. with everyone.
Open up every aspect. Now, I'm curious, what are the big, like the most common questions or like the common thread that you see with people coming to you for advice on sex? What do you typically get from people?
I typically get, honestly, I would say the common question is, how do I get my partner to have more sex with me? I would say the biggest thing is mismatched libidos is what we call it. There's a high desire partner and there's a low desire partner. And in most relationships, the high desire partners don't match up. It's usually that's going to happen. So I want to give, let people know that that is the most normal situation, and people want to know, what do I do if I want more than my partner? So then I often help them find a solution to scheduling sex, having a healthy conversation. How many times a week is right for you? What does your partner need? What gets them in the mood? So you know when sex is the right time sex should happen. I'd say that's a really big one, is mismatched libidos. And then there's also, my audience is split. It's 50% men and 50% women. It's always been that way, which is interesting for a sex podcast, because usually people always assume it's women, but I think that men don't often have open conversations around sex. So I become like their best friend, that I don't shame, I don't judge, I don't blame. And so there's just individual questions, like for women, you know, it can be like, why can't I have an orgasm during penetration? Which they don't realize, since sex education is so abysmal, that most women don't, that only 30% do. And then men want to worry about their penis size and erectile challenges. And then there's always a question about, how do I get my partner to blank? I call it the, how do I get my partner to try something new, do something different, initiate sex. So there's always those kind of questions as well.
So I have to ask this out of pure curiosity. I mean, you're talking about mismatched libidos. Is it always the men who has the higher sex drive?
No. And in fact, that's one of those myths that I believe, that I remember learning that when I started this 15 years ago. I assumed, because this is, because what's perpetuated in society is that women are frigid and prude and men walk around wanting sex all the time. And I have to tell you that I actually think it's equal, that it's split. And I hear it from just as many women as I do from men, who women want, have a higher sex drive than their male partners. It's just another way society has told us, has sort of tried to repress female sexuality and desire. So no, it's not that. I was shocked when I first learned that. I thought, how is that not true? And that's why I want people to get educated and check their belief system, because yeah, women want sex too. We are sexual beings, you know, we deserve pleasure, and we might want it differently than our partners.
Do you think that maybe society has, I mean, when you look back 20 years, or when I think about when I was in high school or whatever, like, I'm not going to age myself here, but it's definitely over 20 years. But do you think that society's attitude towards women and sex, I remember in high school, if you actually liked a boy, you'd be labeled a slut.
Yes.
You know, do you think that maybe now it's not as bad as it used to be, or that there's less pressure on women to be those Pollyanna perfection, no sex drive, whatever?
Yeah, I do think that it's changed. It's funny, because when talking to people in like millennial generation or the generation beneath them, everyone believes that they are more open sexually because they've been exposed to sex and it's more free love and women can have sex like men. And there's some truth to that. But when you go a little bit deeper, what I found as well, they might have been more exposed to sex and more open to sex. And maybe even women are saying, oh, I can go out and I can have casual sex. What? So that might be different, that maybe there's more women now. Because I was the same when I grew up. I was like, oh, I don't want to be seen as a slut, and I don't want to be judged, and I don't want to be shamed. Now women are saying, no, I'm going to have sex like I want to have it. But what I found, what hasn't changed, is that the sex isn't quality sex, that women are still focusing more, if we're talking about heterosexual relationships, women are still focused more on their partner's pleasure. They're more focused on the penis. They're more focused on performative giving, like how can I do this so my partner will feel turned on, and it's less about their own pleasure. Women are the givers. And so I'd still like to see that change. And that only starts with education and understanding our bodies. But that's
absolutely,
so we're more open, but I don't think that the quality is better.
So we're not there yet.
We're not there yet, but we're getting close. Thank you for having me on your show and opening up the conversation and having me in your amazing Forbes article. Like, that was such an honor. So we're changing it. We're doing it. I mean, we're on the path.
Perfect. So, you know, we've touched on societal changes, but I'm curious to know, how did your parents feel about your chosen profession?
You know, at the time, I think that my mom was just
My mom's a businesswoman too. She just wanted me to make a living. She thought that I was struggling. She told her friends I had a show about dating and not sex. But I didn't grow up in a home where sex was particularly like shamed, but I think that it was hard. She didn't really lead out of it was that hard for her. But so I was lucky. She just really was like, well, I hope you can make this work because I know you're really struggling right now and you have a really good college degree. You don't have to do this. But I've always been very independent. My mom's like, well, you're going to do what you want to do. And then my father passed away when I was like 19. But I wonder if I would have had the guts to do this if I had a father that was like, what is my daughter talking about? But in a way, he was a lawyer and he had his own business. So in some ways, I feel like maybe there was some sort of inspiration in that. And I think he'd be okay now.
He had his entrepreneurial spirit.
Yes.
Having gone through what you've gone through and being where you are today and you're super successful, what kind of advice would you give entrepreneurs who are starting out now?
First, I would say some of the things we talked about is find a really great mentor. Find people that you can trust, a few people, not too many, because I've made the mistake of asking too many people, but find a few people that you actually trust their business. Check out their credentials because everyone's going to give you advice. So just find a few people that you trust and that you go back to. And then I would also say it's important to have a really good team, good people, surround yourself with great people, again, that you trust. I've done the classic thing of hiring quickly and firing slowly. And I know you're supposed to hire slowly, hire slowly, fire quickly. So I did the opposite of that. That's part of it. And you want to treat your staff, obviously pay them what you can. And I also think it's important to follow your dream. There's always, I mean, this is might sound cliche, but there's always going to be people who are saying that that's impossible. And I think what you're doing is insane. And it's because those people couldn't do it. It's not because they think you can't. And so I think if you have an internal knowing and a belief that it's your dream and you can't imagine doing anything else when you wake up in the morning, keep going with that. And if you have to supplement income in another way or take another job, I mean, I made the mistake of quitting a job because I thought this was going well and it was the recession and it wasn't what I thought. So I think you have to be humble and you have to be willing to do what it takes and just surround yourself. It's always about finding yourself with really good people as well.
It's so funny that you mentioned that too, because I completely resonate with that. When people tell you that you can't do something, it's totally reflecting on themselves and the limits that they give themselves.
Exactly. It's their own limiting beliefs and it's their own mind jail that they're in. We all have them, but it's not yours, it's theirs. And I think that, yeah, it's a great distinction to make.
Yeah.
It's the same thing about who do you take advice from? It's that same advice, like take a look, do a background check. Like how have they been? Do you want their advice? People have their own, we all have our own motives and our own intentions and consider that. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I love working with women and men who help each other succeed. And I've been so fortunate to meet so many wonderful people like yourself who are there to help each other. And it's just such an amazing feeling.
I think we all have to help each other. It's because that also comes from people with the lack mentality that there's not enough for all of us. And they don't come from abundance. They come from, well, if I'm successful as a podcaster, let's say, then you can't be, you're going to take over my space or with business or anything. But I think you realize the more you think of abundance, like the more the merrier, the more people I help, the better it's for everybody. So that's also a mindset. It's a mindset.
Yeah, for sure. It is a mindset. But I mean, I think about it, I put it in perspective and you think about all the people in the world. There's so many people. So it's not like you're going to reach everybody. There's enough room for everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. And we all have such privilege, right? And so you might as well like help others. There is enough. And I don't even, there's enough. And you realize the more you give, the more you get.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I love that.
I did a masterclass. I was approached by masterclass early last year and they asked me to teach. So masterclass is an online educational platform and their tagline is learn from the world's best. So Anna Wintour teaches fashion and Martin Scorsese teaches directing and they approached me to teach sex. It was their first wellness course and I was incredibly honored and that came out end of November. And it's an hour and a half course. And it was really amazing to be able to really take time to prep and think about how do I teach sex to everybody, regardless of your gender, your age, your orientation, your genitalia. And that's been really successful. I've heard from so many people who really feel like it inspired them to take the next step on their journey and their sexual journey, whether it's their first step or their middle step. It has some tools that are just inspiring for people to
take a look at their sexuality and what works for them and what doesn't.
Yeah, anymore. I mean, I personally watched it and I loved it. It was very interesting and educational. I really
appreciate
it. And of course, you looked gorgeous as always.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, you know, it's been a great conversation with you and I love learning from you. If there's one tip that you would want listeners to take away from today, from our conversation or anything that we haven't talked about.
Well, you know, you really made me think, Melissa, about having important conversations and not being afraid to communicate with your partner, with your employees, because the conversations that you don't want to have are actually the ones that are going to be holding you back. So just to reinforce that, I think that's really important. And I always say communication is a lubrication, but I'm trying to think of how it goes for money, but communication is just going to help you in every area of your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree. Yeah. Even with money. It can still
Even
be a lubrication.
Money. Yep. Exactly. Well, think about it. If we don't talk about money, then and we come from lack also, that's what's going to show up. So the more we put it front and center, more money is going to show. I believe if you treat it in a healthy way, yeah. More money and more sex. Let's say that. Yep.
Exactly. And have healthy conversations about money and healthy conversations about sex.
Then you just got the kids to deal with.
Yeah. You got to, and equal the child rearing. Chores, you know, 50-50, and then you've got a good.
Then you're fine. You are smooth sailing.
You guys are sailing. Thank you so much for coming
Thank
on the
you.
Show today. If people want to find you, I know you've got your website, sexwithemily.com, and we're going to leave the link in the show notes.
Thank you.
And then your podcast name is?
Sex with Emily. It's all Sex with Emily. The podcast is available on all podcast platforms. My website has a lot of great information for people. We have great downloadables. If you want to have healthy conversations with your couples, you can download it. There's the games that couples can play together. It's all sexwithemily.com and also social media. Sex with Emily.
Awesome. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Think Like a CFO podcast with Melissa Houston, CPA. If you've enjoyed this episode, leave us a review. Your ratings and reviews help more people like you find our podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe and share this episode with someone you think would love it. Until next time, I'm Melissa Houston, and remember, nobody will ever care about your business as much as you do. So never give your financial power away.